I knew the Borough Surveyor in Accrington, where I was brought up, and that may be one of the factors. I was quite interested in mathematics at that time, perhaps more than any other subject, and there seemed to be a link there with civil engineering. Also, coming sort of closer to home, I recall with interest, we used to come through from East Lancashire, coming out to the coast and crossing a bridge over the Ribble on the east side of Preston. It was always known as Halfpenny Bridge because there had been a toll there many years ago. It must be way back in the 1930s when they were widening this bridge. And I was intrigued by how you went about it and how did you decide what sort of structure you would need to carry the traffic of the day. So those are the two factors.
Was there any particular interest in roads when you first started out, or was it just an engineering angle in general?
Not specifically roads, but in my last year at university, you could concentrate on a particular type of engineering, and I did actually go for bridge engineering at that time. So that was the root of it, I suppose.
Okay, so from there you moved straight into Lancashire County Council?
No. When I graduated in 1942, and I went into the army, and I was commissioned in the Royal Engineers, and I served in Italy, where I encountered some of the early motorways, the earliest in Europe, because Italy was quite in the forefront. So I had occasion to use them, but of course they were quite different to what we know now. They had the basic characteristic in the sense that it was control access, but in terms of layout and so on, nothing like the sort of motorways that we have in this country today. So that was one of the reasons. And then when I came out of the army in 1947, and I was looking for a job, I had graduated, of course, and I got a job down in the West Country, in Gloucester, because there had been the very severe winter of 1946-47. There was a lot of damage down there, flood damage and sea defence works and that sort of thing. So I went down there. Then I worked down there for about 18 months. And then I decided to come back up north from where I came from. And I applied for a job with the County Surveyors Department and joined them in 1948.
Were they already looking at a motorway programme by the time you got there?
Yes, because Jim Drake, who was County Surveyor and Bridgemaster, who'd been appointed in 1945, and he had taken part in a visit to the Autobahn in Germany in 1937, with a large group of engineers from this country, because there's certainly a lot of enthusiasm to get a motorway system going. And in fact, I've got a slide which shows Jim Drake on it with a chap called Herr Tott, who was Hitler's leading light in terms of construction, etc., and using, of course, slave labour to some extent towards the end of the war, and there Tott is there with the swastika on his arm. So Jim Drake was quite enthused by this. And then when he was appointed, as I said, in 1945, one of the first things he decided to do was to develop a road plan for Lancashire, which is a hardback volume of considerable interest, and a lot of work went into that in terms of looking at what the problems were in Lancashire, what the traffic situation might be in years to come, etc. I developed this road plan from that, which of course had a motorway network within it, and a very interesting document. And this was based on trying to get somewhere near to a good solution in a period of 30 years. And with that road plan, which became part of the county structure plan, and it became it was probably the first of its kind, and he looked at accidents and road safety and all that sort of thing. And so the Department of Transport, the Ministry of Transport, were quite interested in this because it was the first thing that had been done. Meanwhile, of course, there had been proposals to put to widen the A6, A49 route through Lancashire before the war. And the county council, going back before the war, were extremely concerned about the East Lancashire Road, the A580, which had been opened by King George V in 1934 and had a very bad accident record. It was only a single carriageway with inadequate provision at junctions, etc. And the county council of the day, that was about 1936, said, look, we're not going to have a road like this up through Lancashire. We want a road restricted to motor traffic, which in effect was a motorway. So there was that background to what Jim Drake wanted to do.
Was James Drake the main force behind getting a motorway network in Lancashire?
Oh yes, without any doubt at all. He had been the borough surveyor of Blackpool before he took up the appointment in Lancashire. And after his visit to Germany, he had ideas to have a sort of a de facto motorway ring road around Blackpool, but that never materialised.
How far on from this stage was the Preston bypass then as the first part of the plan?
Well, there had been this proposal before the war. As I said, the county council view was that there should be a road restricted to motor traffic up through Lancashire, and so pressure was put on the Ministry of Transport to do something about this. The minister of the day, and I'm talking about before the war, Leslie Bergin, who was the minister, and he was very keen, and he came actually on a visit in, I think it was about 1938, up to Lancashire, and realised what the difficulties were, because if you tried to widen the existing route, which of course went through centre of Warrington, centre of Wigan, centre of Preston, centre of Lancaster, centre of Kendal, right up to the north of there, Penrith and Carlisle. You know, all these sort of bypasses which were needed would have been one solution. But to talk about widening those existing routes would have been very difficult indeed because of property demolition which would have been involved through places like Warrington and Wigan. And so there was this concept there before the war. Anyway, Leslie Bergin didn't get very far because I think the Treasury stepped in there and sort of said it was going to pay for it. And then the war came, of course. And so it was realised that during the war, surprisingly, I only came across this comparatively recently, in 1941, which was at the worst period of the war, you know, out in Far East, for example, and you know, it was a very serious situation in 1941. And yet Churchill set up a reconstruction committee looking at what the situation might be after the war. So, you know, he was obviously an optimist. And this reconstruction committee did actually set up some organisation to look at what the future needs might be. Meanwhile, in 1937, the Institution of Highway Engineers, as it was then, and is now the Institution of Highways and Transportation, they developed a plan, a map. It was a map showing the motorway network. And in 1938, the County Surveyor Society did the same sort of thing. And these maps are in existence. So there was that background interest to it. And so the opportunity came up, certainly in the northwest, to press ahead with a new route up through Lancashire. And Jim Drake took the view, quite rightly, that the only way that you could really get ahead with this in terms of, because of a period of financial restraint, is to develop a series of bypasses around the various places like Preston and Lancaster, etc. And then hopefully link all these together as part of the main route. So that was the concept. So Preston Bypass came on stream as the first one.
Was there a particular reason why Preston was the first?
Well, it had as serious a problem as any of the other towns. And of course, I suppose the fact that there was this proximity to County Hall in Preston, that was one of the advantages. And of course, it had the unique situation, the fact that the A59, which was the trunk road the A6 running through north-south or south-north, and the A59 passing right through the middle of Preston, with a particular configuration of the Ribble, which, as you know, winds right round Preston. So the crossings of the Ribble were a fundamental point.
What was your role at the time when the Preston Bypass was being built?
Well, when I joined the department in 1948, and I got involved in what was known as a highways improvement section, and this was fairly mundane sort of work, and in fact, there quite a few people were sort of disillusioned and left the department because there didn't seem to be anything going to happen. And
this would be very minor improvements.
Well,
then,
exactly, comparatively minor. And so I worked on that for a time, and then I managed to get myself transferred into the motorway bridges office. I was involved in motorway bridge design for a limited period, completing some of the designs for bridges on Preston Bypass. And then when the work started, I went out on site in 1957. As assistant resident engineer responsible for the supervision of bridge construction. And then following that, I got moved down to Stretford Eccles Bypass, which was the first county motorway and was a direct follow-on in construction terms, with particular responsibility for Bart Mile Level Bridge. And once Stretford Eccles Bypass was completed, I was then appointed for work on the Preston Warrington length, but that didn't last very long because I was then appointed resident engineer for the Preston Lancaster section of the motorway, and then after that I became sort of a chief assistant, if you like, very much involved in troubleshooting, I might say, more than anything else, and we're working very closely with Jim Drake, obviously, and then the road construction units were suggested as a way forward, because it was realised that the county councils couldn't really continue to the extent that they had done in the past as agent authorities. Not because they hadn't got the resources to do it. It was because the order making procedure for the trunk road network and all the financial side of it was all dealt with in London. There was no regional approach at all. The regional office was involved, but not in physical terms. So the fact that Jim Drake was continuously getting on the train and going down to London and meeting people down there, as an example. But of course, the other counties were in a similar situation. So the idea of the road construction units came up as being a partnership between the Ministry of Transport and various county councils that had the resources to become involved. And Lancashire was of course in the forefront, and the first road construction unit covering the northwest was set up in Preston with Jim Drake as the director.
It wasn't so much of a production line with the road construction units at that stage then?
Well, it was, to the extent that the headquarters was in Preston, but within the county councils involved in the northwest, there were only the two, Lancashire and Cheshire, because up in Westmorland, of course, comparatively small county, and Carlisle would only have that section of M6 going through Cumberland, as it was, and. So the actual day-to-day work on design was dealt with in what were known as subunits of the road construction unit, one set up in Lancashire, one set up in Cheshire, where staff that, of course, were very experienced by that time, were allocated to the subunit. They were still county council employees, but they were allocated, whereas people that were involved in the headquarters, as I was when it was set up, there was Jim Drake and a civil servant who was brought in as the deputy director, an engineer, of course, And I went there as superintending engineer construction. And so it was a mix of civil, headquarters, civil servants and county staff. But the county council staff who were there were seconded, and that was significant because you became in effect a civil servant and you were subject to the rules of the civil service in terms of Official Secrets Act and all that sort of thing. So it was a different world.
It was moving part of the London administration out to the regions,
of course,
in that case.
Of course, right. And of course, because of that, the headquarters of the road construction unit had considerable authority. I mean, for example, in letting contracts, it was quite remarkable how quickly we found ourselves being able to do it. We'd invite tenders. All the detailed design work and preparation of contract documents, of course, would be done by the subunits. But when we invited tenders, the tenders were received by the headquarters, and we'd have chaps sort of working, I wouldn't say all night, but long hours and so on, checking the arithmetic of the lowest tender. And we'd invite the contractor in within about 3 or 4 days, and we'd have a letter already prepared and subject to agreeing the arithmetic and looking at their insurances and so on. We'd have a 2-page letter, and that would be signed immediately, passed to them and saying, when can you start? And that would be within about 3 or 4 days. The contractors welcomed it, we welcomed it, but that letter became the contract. You know, we're talking about multi-million pound jobs. And so it was very good in that sense. Well, this was Jim Drake's attitude, of course. We've got to press on, get things done. And of course, he didn't like a lot of the bureaucracy that went with it. But on the other hand, he realised that all the statutory procedures would have to be gone through. And therefore, he became... We talk about public relations these days as a profession. He was one of the best public relations that you could ever find, because he established links with all sorts of people, all the authorities in the area. I mean, the county boroughs, of course, in those days were highway authorities in their own right, but they didn't really get involved in the motorway construction program at all, apart from in Manchester with the Mancunian Way, and they did that through a parliamentary bill as opposed to using the Highways Act. So Jim Drake was a public relations man. He had very close relationships with the press and so on. He'd go to a meeting anywhere and talk to people about what he was doing. And of course, one of the key things was that because we were based in Preston, we knew the county, he was a Lancastrian, quite a number of us were Lancastrians and so on. We knew the area. We knew that we were going to have to live with whatever we built afterwards, which, of course, is a very salutary discipline in a way.
What was James Drake like to work with as a colleague?
Well, he was a tough character, but the department was basically composed of, I suppose you could say, three groups of people. I'm talking about the technical side. You would get a few who worked there before the war, you know, the older lot. You get quite a few, a large number of ex-service people. Well, like myself, for example. And then you get quite a few that had been worked perhaps on airfield construction as civilians during the war had come in. So it was a mixed bag in that sense. But Jim Drake, who hadn't been in the services at all, and yet he operated very much like a military commander in some respects. You know, you call a spade and not a bloody shovel. I suppose he'd welcome that expression. But he'd play hell with people if he thought that they weren't getting on fast enough and so on. But he'd forget all about it the next day, and you were back to square one again. But it was very much a Mr. So-and-so. Even his secretary was Mrs. So-and-so. He never called anybody by the Christian name. And everybody reacted to him as Sir. You know, he was very much a hands-on boss in all respects. And he had the habit, if you like, of going round the jobs on a Sunday. He always did that. Anything going on outside, he'd be round on a Sunday with his dog. And on Monday morning, you knew what was happening. If you didn't happen to be out there on a Sunday, but in those days, we were working 7 days a week. And because the contractors were working on the same basis to a large extent, and you would be expected to be there supervising if they were there. So, you know, you didn't get paid any extra for that. It was a tough life, but, you know, we survived. And he did appreciate fully, you know, the efforts that were being put in by the staff, very much so.
It does almost sound like a military operation. With
it was, very much so, in many respects.
Just to go back to the Preston bypass for a moment, and to play devil's advocate, no offence intended by this, but given that it was 8 miles of dual carriageway, thereabouts, one grade separated junction in the middle, was it really that much of an achievement, or is it just remembered mainly because it was the first motorway?
Well, it was an achievement in the sense that it was recognised by the Minister of the day, Minister of Transport, that it was a guinea pig. And of course, the other factors coming into it were the fact that the ground conditions were pretty awful. Very, very bad ground conditions with clays, sandy clays, that sort of thing. Very difficult to handle, difficult for the contractors, using, of course, plant which was a relic of things like airfield construction during the war, and also the bridges were very much, many of them, an innovation in terms of design. Great variety in bridge design and construction. To the extent that at the end of the job, the Department of Transport, or Ministry of Transport as it was then, sent up a load testing vehicle, or shall I say a bridge testing. You're testing the bridge, but using this heavy vehicle that could be loaded, and putting that onto various of the structures, and measuring deflections and that sort of thing with strain gauges, etc. In fact, there's an amusing instrument incident following on from that. It was towards the end of the job, I suppose the end of November. The job opened in the 5th of December. And we were providing all the sort of scaffold for these chaps, a chap called Charlie Donald, who was a ministry man, and his assistant, to do all the sort of measurements themselves. So we organised it, and because of this particular vehicle, which could be loaded to, you know, quite a heavy load, and so we fixed up a police escort, because we realised that it would have to go over certain routes where there were, I wouldn't say weak bridges, but bridges which were perhaps not capable of carrying these loads. And it was late one evening, you know, down on the site, and I got a call from police headquarters saying, could I arrange a crane to go up to a particular site immediately? And so I organised this crane from one of the contractors and went up there, just north of Preston. And this vehicle, with the police escort, had gone along this minor road, where the bridge had been carrying the minor road over the motorway, and they couldn't find any way to turn round, and they kept on and on and on, going out into the countryside, and complete with a police escort, and they came to a junction where there was a weak bridge, and instead of going over it once, they went over it three times, and it was only a small bridge, and then it went down, and the crunch of the vehicle was straddled across the gap. And of course, we couldn't get it out without unloading it with this crane. So, you know, we all often said it was the first time that a bridge on an unclassified county road had been, or the cost of a reconstruction of this bridge had been paid for wholly by the Ministry of Transport. Anyway.
So with the Preston Bypass complete then, the first sort of the first link in the chain complete,
yes,
so to speak, was Lancashire's campaigning for a decent road network done then, or was that just the beginning of
things? Oh no, this was just the beginning, because following on from that, of course, Lancaster Bypass came on stream, and of course the design of Lancaster Bypass was, it started while Preston Bypass was still under construction, so that many of the things like the geometry and the hard shoulders and so on were based on the original design for Preston, and it was too late to change it really, because Lancaster Bypass was well on its way. But answering your point about campaigning, oh no, the campaigning went on. Well, Jim Drake retired in 1972, and you could say he was still campaigning when he retired in 1972, and there was still a lot of things still left to be done after he retired. So it was a continual operation, and affected, I mean, for example, he got out a campaign for east-west routes across the county, because having established, I mean, the basic network, of course, was the M6 down the middle, the M61 Preston to Manchester, and there was a proposal from Preston down to Liverpool, but that was based on the fact that Liverpool and North East Lancashire had a very positive link because of the textile industry being fed out through Liverpool. And the importance of that route from Preston down to Liverpool rather fell away. So that was the basis. But the East-West campaign that started was to get what we know as M62 moving in the south, the M58, which is the Aintree-Skelmersdale road, which, of course, should have been continued across to connect with M62 beyond Bolton and Rochdale, and then further north, a route from North East Lancashire, the textile towns, leading across to Preston, and then the M55 as we know it, leading across the far coast. So there was a campaign developed for those east-west routes.
Was do you think Lancashire's political campaigning, if you like, in the sense that it was pushing for more funding and more attention to be paid to the road network, do you think that paid off for other areas of the country as well?
I'm sure it did. And of course, politically, it was a very interesting situation, because the county council, in party political terms, changed fairly frequently over the years from being Conservative-controlled or Labour-controlled. And what happened was there was a very close relationship. Party politics, as we know it now, didn't enter into it. I mean, for example, on the Highways and Bridges Committee, as it was known then, the chairman, when it was Conservative control, was Sir Thomas Hargreaves, and his vice chairman was a chap called Cameron Dootson, who was a former trade union man, and they worked very closely together. And when the political colour of the county council changed, they changed places. So one became the chairman, and the other became the vice chairman. And so, but they had one very positive approach to it, and that was, we want a proper road structure for Lancashire, because apart from anything else, they realised that with the decline in the traditional industries, North East Lancashire with the textile industry, and then in South Lancashire with the mining industry going, and so on, it was a changed situation. And they realised that in order to deal with those problems, employment particularly, something had to be done. Now, there's very good evidence of what has been done in recent years. The M65, which, of course, links into North East Lancashire, there was a delay there, which I could go into in much more detail, in completing the M65 to the south of Blackburn, known as the Blackburn sort of bypass section of the M65. If you go to South Blackburn now, or southeast area of Blackburn, and see the tremendous amount of industrial development that's taken place there now, which would not have happened if M65 hadn't been there. So, you know, this was an example of the consequences of having a good road network. And the county council of the day realised this, that something had to be done. And, of course, in those days, the county council was a very influential body. I mean, ministers used to come up regularly to find out what Lancashire County Council felt about things. Not purely in the party political sense, but because they realised this was an area of the country that needed something doing to it because of the consequences of industrial decline.
Was that the principal reason you think that Lancashire was so militant about its campaign and other areas maybe weren't?
Yes, I think that was an important factor. I wouldn't say it was militant. It was done on good, sound principles of argument based on fact and a lot of, if you like, basic research which was undertaken by our staff, which had developed the road plan.
Well, it does come across as being, or as having been, more vocal than other areas. For example, you'd think maybe the Yorkshire conurbation or the West Midlands were in the same, or in a similar kind of situation with industrial decline, and yet they weren't pushing in the same way for more funding, and they haven't come out of it with such a comprehensive new road network.
I think you're right in that sense. The West Riding was probably the nearest equivalent to Lancashire in that sense, but of course Cheshire was just as positive in what they wanted, because they realised the importance there of the chemical industries in the Chester Wirral area, Frodsham around there, and also the links across to the east to connect into what became the ultimately the M60. So the Manchester to Chester North Wales route was important in their eyes. So there was a lot of positive campaigning from their point of view as well. And of course, the other important factor as far as Cheshire was concerned was the Second Mersey Tunnel, which was linked into the M53 coming down the Wirral Peninsula. Those sort of went hand in glove because the original Mersey Tunnel was getting overloaded. And so, there were these campaigns in all sorts of ways going on.
There just seemed to have been a sense in which Lancashire was sort of pushing ahead for progress and for building roads and for improving its infrastructure in a very kind of rapid
yes.
way. Was there a sense in which it was pulling faster than the ministry was willing to go?
Oh yes, I mean, one's got to recognise that behind all this is the Treasury, and who play a key role in all these things. On the other hand, the senior people in the Department of Ministry of Transport, people naming names like Sir William Harris, who was the Director General of the Highways at one time, you may have seen his name, he died, was it last year? Anyway, people like him were fully behind us. No doubt about that. The difficulties perhaps that we had to some extent was with certainly the Treasury, some of the administrators down the line, if you like, who were very much, if you like, civil service orientated in terms of things that got to be done in a proper way, didn't like shortcuts and so on.
It was a case of politics with the little p getting in the way.
Exactly. And to the extent we're talking about Jim Drake going down to Department of Transport, they always used to say that the message used to go round the Department of Transport, Drake's in the building, almost watch out or run for cover, because he'd go bouncing it into anybody. If he got a name, he'd find out who it was and he'd go and find them. What have you done about this? Why can't you get on with it faster? In fact, there's some interesting stories I could tell you there about that sort of thing. But certainly there was that attitude within the department. The senior people in the ministry were 100% behind us. because they'd set the stall out. You probably remember the 1,000 miles of motorway, for example. You know, there was a target. The senior people in the ministry realised they've got to try and achieve that target. And in order to do that, they needed people like Drake and Lovell and so on in order to get on with it. Otherwise, they wouldn't achieve their objectives. So with all the sort of order-making procedures that one had to go through, and compulsory purchase orders and so on, it was a very lengthy business. And you may have heard possibly, and it was Stuart Lovell who developed this, it was known as the 39 steps. And that was, in fact, I think it's over about, what is it now, Peter, about 45, I think. And the 39 steps you had to go through before you could get the project off on the way. You know, very lengthy procedure. But on the other hand, you've got to recognise that Preston Bypass was built without a single public inquiry. In fact, the whole of the M6 through Lancashire only had one public inquiry into a compulsory purchase order when the farmer concerned, he'd objected, the inquiry was arranged, and he never turned up. So, you know, it went through the whole of M6 without a public inquiry. But this was all associated with, at the background, was the public relations aspect. And on Preston Bypass, you may have heard about this, before work ever started in the design stages, in order to get it through to the public, a model was built of what it would look like. And this was built voluntarily in the evenings by the staff in the department, and it was only the very junior ones who got overtime, because if you got up to a certain level, you didn't get overtime. And this was done completely voluntarily, and it was taken around the area to show what Preston Bypass would look like when it's completed.
I'm just trying to remember what the quote is now. There's a member of Sabre who I know quite well called Tony Frost, lives in the southeast in Canterbury now, I think. And at the time I was talking to him, he was quite frustrated about the state of the road network in the southeast, in the sense that there wasn't an awful lot of road building until the 1970s, really. Not an awful lot happening. And he said, you know, they got so bogged down there with inquiries and reroutings and local government infighting. He says, look at Lancashire, just look what we could have had if we just got on with it.
Absolutely right. And as I say, there were a lot of county boroughs in Lancashire. You know, the Liverpool, Manchester, Salford, Warrington, St Helens, you know, you name it. Rochdale, Oldham, a lot of county boroughs which were highway authorities in their own right. But they realised the importance of this and cooperated fully with the county council. So there was no infighting at all in that respect. Everybody was of the same mind. We've got to get on with this. And the fact that we, as the County Surveyors Department, we operated actually within the county borough areas, not to a large extent, because we tended to be bypassed the concentrations of traffic, but places like Rochdale, Oldham, for example, you know, that was working in the county boroughs, but we were doing it, fully cooperative.
It was a case of everyone sort of pulling together in the same direction.
Absolutely. But, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't, we weren't faced with problems. Obviously, we were. But coming back to what I said earlier on about the importance on a bigger scale of getting these advanced contracts going in order to get on with the job without having a lot of construction traffic moving through sensitive urban areas. That was all part of the exercise. There was a lot of forward thinking and a lot of good, I use the word planning, but I don't mean planning in the sense of planning authorities, as we know it. We were planning our programmes in advance and knowing where we were going and what the next stage was. It was always looking ahead. And of course, one thing that Jim Drake, right at the very outset, did, you might think he stuck his neck out, he persuaded the county council to allow him to appoint staff, and there was a big build-up of staff in the late 40s, early 50s, even though the work hadn't started. And if it hadn't come off, then he would have probably been open to criticism. Look, you've persuaded us to agree to appoint all these staff. What are they doing? And so, you know, that was forward thinking on a big way. And associated with that, his principle was have the next scheme ready, even though perhaps didn't appear in any ministry programme. You know, have it ready. And of course, the senior people in the Ministry of Transport supported this idea because they knew very well if a scheme perhaps in other parts of the country was falling by the way because of statutory procedures or something like that, they'd be saying, OK, Lancashire can get on with something. You know, so it was, there was a lot of that going on at the time, which was a good thing.
Do you think it was principally James Drake's leadership that has left Lancashire with this very comprehensive, very, very capable road network that it has today?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Yes. Because the amount of new construction carried out since 1972 has been, mind you, a lot of it was done up to that time, but there hasn't been as much done in after 1972 as there was before. But, I mean, that was purely simply because he went right up to the wire, if you like. He stayed on to the last day of his 61st, you know, in his 61st birthday before he went, you know. He was there to the end.
So how did you progress during that time as well? How did your career go after that time?
Well, as I mentioned, I became superintending engineer in the road construction unit with... It started off at the headquarters. There was Jim Drake, there was a chap called Donald Dean, who was the civil servant engineer, moved in as deputy. There was an administrator from the county council, a chap called Norman Walsh, who moved in with us. And there was Jim Drake's secretary, and that was the nucleus. But it gradually built up over the, you know, the following few months. But Jim Drake wasn't happy about the situation when it first came to light. Stuart Lovell had been appointed by the Ministry of Transport, he was a bit older than Jim Drake, to try and get this concept moving. And Jim Drake was a bit suspicious about it. In fact, I remember it well, when the ideas were first floated. Jim Drake said, look, I'd like you, a chap called Eric Whittaker, who was then very much involved in Preston Warrington, section of M6, for example, and ran the sort of section that developed all the programmes, an engineer, of course, and invited Eric Whittaker and myself to go around one Saturday afternoon to his house. He lived in St Anne's. And we sat round the table and went through all these proposals, and Jim sort of sat there glaring and sort of, ooh, and said, right, what do you think? So, do you think it'll work? So we said, well, we think we can make it work. Right, okay, we'll go ahead with it. As I say, he was appointed director at the first one, but he didn't stay very long. He only stayed 18 months. His deputy, a chap called John Dean, had taken over as acting county surveyor while Jim Drake was away. Jim went after about 18 months. I think that, well, there are various reasons. One, I think he felt that the dead hand of the civil service were moving in, whereas when we took over initially, you know, it was very much a free hand to get on with it. And I think that was the factor. He thought that he would have perhaps greater influence back in the county council than he would have as a director, perhaps under the thumb of somebody in London. So he came, it started in the 1st of April 1967, and he left in about the summer of 68, about 18 months later. And I stayed there till 1969, so I was there just over 2 years, and then it was decided, because of staffing growth, that there should be a second deputy county surveyor, and I was fortunate to be appointed to that role. So we had Jim Drake and two deputies, Jim Ingram, who was the first deputy. I was the sort of second deputy from 69, and then reorganisation was coming up, local government reorganisation of 1974. And Jim Ingram decided, of course, he was quite a bit older than myself. He was older than Jim Drake, and he decided he'd retire. He could have stayed on till he was 65, so he retired in 1974. There was a shadow county council set up between 73 and 74, and I was appointed in towards the end of 73. Because Jim Ingram said he would retire anyway. So that's how it came about. So I became County Surveyor and Bridge Master in 1st of April 74, at the time of reorganisation.
So what sort of projects were you pushing through at that time when you were County Surveyor and Bridge Master?
Well, there were quite a number of projects still that had started in that era. The M55, for example, that started in 73, was completed in 75. The A58, Aintree Skelmersdale, that had started, that was ongoing. There was the completion of the M62 across South Lancashire, that was ongoing. So, you know, all these were ongoing things. The M65 are not really got off the ground to any great extent. I mean, it had been through the procedures of public inquiry and that sort of thing, and a lot of work had been done, particularly over towards the eastern end. The Burnley Cone, for example, section was getting underway, and then further back towards the west, Hymen to Burnley. So things were very much ongoing. But the last bit was a pity, really, that it took so long, and that was what I mentioned earlier, the Blackburn Southern Bypass. And this stemmed from, I regret to say, the attitude of some of the Department of Transport people, the regional office and so on, who hadn't appreciated the situation in Lancashire. Because where I was brought up in northeast Lancashire, there was a positive link south to Manchester, because the northeast Lancashire towns were the textile producers and Manchester was the commercial centre. So there was always this north-south link. We never thought of travelling out in this direction to the west, unless you happened to want to go to Blackpool or come here. You know, there wasn't that link. There wasn't the link with Preston. And then, of course, these civil servants, they didn't realise this. And so we had a silly situation whereby we had a motorway completed at one stage from Hymen, if that means anything to you, right through to Nelson. And I think the figures were something we'd spent about 130 million by that time on this section. And yet we couldn't get any sense out of them in terms of a route coming to the west to connect with M6 and M61. They came up with proposals to widen the existing A677, A59 route coming in past Salisbury Hall, if that means anything to you, to widen that, which was ridiculous.
Which would drop traffic in the middle of the Preston bypass.
Well, it would. It'd finish up at Salisbury and try to get up the hill at Salisbury Hill, which had never been resolved for all these years. And so they couldn't see this. And we managed to persuade. I mean, I'd taken up office by that time. We decided to be fair, the Department of Transport decided to look for various alternatives to get through or around the Blackburn area, which quite frankly was a disaster in public participation terms, if you like, public consultation, because they came up with, we'd been involved through the subunit on this, the early stages. They came up with five, or was it six, alternative lines, Peter? I don't know. I put these out for public consultation with thousands of questionnaires going out. And, of course, asking people to fill these things in and exhibitions and so on. We weren't directly involved, you know, we were on the fringe of this. But it was a shambles because, inevitably, anybody living in a particular patch would say, oh, I don't want that one through my patch, you see. And so how to analyse the results of a massive exercise like that. And it took years to get the answer. And then at the end of the day, in their wisdom, they came out with an all-purpose proposal. You spend 130 million on motorways not connected to anywhere, you know, between Heinbund through to Nelson, not connected to the national system, and yet talking about an all-purpose route across to Preston to join up with M6-M62. Meanwhile, of course, the Central Lancashire New Town had come on stream, and they, as part of this exercise, you know, I'm going back earlier, it was decided there ought to be an impact study carried out. And this was considering the impact of the new town around Preston on, Lancashire as a whole, or particularly in North East Lancashire. You know, would it be diverting resources into central Lancashire as opposed to North East Lancashire, which was becoming very much a deprived area? And so that impact study certainly helped, because this showed the need for proper communications between North East Lancashire and the West. So there was this silly situation. And so we did an exercise, when I was in office by that time, an exercise looking at these, what should be done. And we produced a report known as the, it was, there were different colours for the different routes, and this was known as the Green B route. And we produced this report, and we decided we'd mount a deputation to go and see the minister. And it was the biggest, I've been on a number of deputations on various things over the years, but this was the biggest one I'd ever been on. And we had several of the MPs, you know, Jack Straw, for example. He was MP for Blackburn, he was in on this, Robert Atkin. There were a whole group of Dan Jones at Burnley. So there was a mixed bag of political differences, if you like. And also, I'll come back to one of the other MPs in a moment. All the local authorities in that part of the county were backing us. And there must have been about, I don't know, 30 or more on this deputation. And we went down to see Linda Chalker, who was then the minister. And the civil servants, without naming names, were still insisting that this wasn't the right answer. You know? And one MP, who I haven't mentioned, but I will mention his name, who, Den Dover, who was the MP for Chorley, who happened to be a Conservative Member of Parliament. He lost his seat subsequently, but he's back now as an MEP for that area. And we produced this report, we circulated it, and when the chips were down and everybody was having a go and putting their views forward to the minister, and Den Dover was the only objector. And he happened to be a civil engineer, one of the few civil engineer MPs, certainly in the North West. Well, I don't think he's the only one, actually. And it was pretty clear, I don't know whether you want to quote me on this, it was pretty clear that he'd never read this report. So I said to the minister, Linda, and of course, because he was a civil engineer, we're on first name terms, you see. And I said to the minister, I said, well, it's pretty clear that Mr. Dover hasn't had an opportunity to study this report in detail, but I think it might be helpful, and I'd be prepared to meet Den Dover at any time to go through this report with him. And she sort of grasped this. She said, oh, well, that's good. Yes, well, all right, let's have a look at it on that basis. So his secretary phoned me up a few days later and said, well, the only time I can really come in, within a matter of a week or so, is on a Saturday afternoon. And is that convenient if I came to your office on the Saturday afternoon? I said, look, Michael, I said any time, anywhere. I said, yes. So we opened the office, and one of our colleagues, Hartley, actually, came with me, and we opened the office, and he came in. And we went through the report in detail, and it was pretty clear, which was a pity for a civil engineer, that he never studied it at all, never studied the arguments, which was very sad. And following that visit, I wrote a personal letter to Linda Chalker, pointed out that I'd had this meeting, etc., etc. And it took a few, a month or two, sort of, before I got the answer. And she gave it the okay. So she actually went over the head of one of her own colleagues politically, because she was conservative, obviously. Dendover's conservative. And over the heads of some of the civil servants who were holding us back. But it took years. And, of course, by this time, we weren't but directly involved. The consulting engineers had been appointed to deal with it, you know, part of the whole privatisation, and the fact that the road construction unit by this time had gone out of existence anyway, you know, the demise of the units. And so we got a satisfactory answer in the end, and they went ahead and designed it, and it was really not completely the last piece of motorway to be opened. That was in 1997, with Jack Straw. I must say, Jack Straw was very good. He backed us 100% on this, because his constituency, of course, is in Blackburn.
Would you say, with all the political wranglings that you mentioned with the local government reorganisation, by the time you came to be county surveyor and bridgemaster, had a lot of the had a lot of the power, if you like, gone from that role?
Yes, I think that's probably true. It was all in the period of privatisation, of course. That was a particular factor. And yes, I think that's probably a correct summary. And the fact that, in terms of politics in the county council, this became more, well, it sounds a bit silly, more political in the sense. The emphasis, of course, beyond 1974, would it be about 1978 or something like that. Well, in 1974, the county council was given a different role, apart from being the highway authority, of course. The department was given responsibility for public transport, for example, and also for waste disposal. So the situation had changed in that respect. But there was a different role to play. But once the county council and I don't criticise them for this, became Labour controlled, of course, they were all for public transport, greater emphasis. On the other hand, we got on quite well in that respect, and it's interesting that the parliamentary secretary of the day about that time was John Horam, if that means anything to you. John Horam was he was a Labour minister, not Secretary of State, but junior minister, and he got very keen about this, and he used to come up and see us quite regularly because he realised, you know, what we were trying to do. And And it was quite amusing in one respect that he developed a good relationship with the chairman of the committee, who was a Conservative, and they used to exchange Christmas cards and that sort of thing. You know, so that there was actually he opted out of the Labour Party and joined the Lib Dems, or was it Conservatives? He switched anyway, and you don't hear any more of him. But so it was a different role, but we took the role seriously, shall I put it that way, and to the extent that when the government decided to deregulate public transport, and the minister came up for a meeting, public meeting in Preston, I remember it well, I'd just retired by this time, but the county council people invited me to go and do a presentation of this meeting as to what we had been doing over the years. And in fact, it was quite interesting because I did this and the minister took it all in. And as I was coming out of this meeting, which was the Guildhall in Preston, and who should I find myself next to? One of our main objectors to road proposals. He'd been on our backs for years, this fellow. I can't remember his name now. And he turned to me and he said, "Oh, Mr. Eden, I see you've joined the Angels." Because, they get the impression that you are highway orientated to the extent that you're not interested in any other forms of transport. And, of course, one sad part of it is that we're talking about public transport, we're talking about buses, of course, because we had no influence on the railways at all, which was a great pity, because you talk about all the talk about integration of transport, which is a nonsense term. I've never thought there was anything, any merit in it, talking about integration. We've been integrating for years. Going back to Blackpool, Jim Drake was surveyor of Blackpool before he came to the county in 1945. Blackpool North Station, which is the only station now very consequent leading into Blackpool, across the road from the station is the first, I think I'm right in this, the first multi-storey car park built in Britain with the bus station on the lower floor. Now, you couldn't have greater integration there. And that was just common sense in those days, which Jim Drake was involved in, without talking about integration and so on. It was an obvious thing to do. So, all the nonsense which is talked about these days, and nobody does much about it, in this... the train you've come on, the connections, I don't know which train you got, what time you got into Preston, but the lack of coordination between times of trains, if I go down to London, coming back and getting on the train, coming out in this direction, it's pathetic. The train coming out here leaves 3 minutes before the train from London gets in, Now that, where's the integration there?
I think I had about half an hour at Preston.
Did you really?
Can I just say... 1974, Lancashire suddenly found itself surrounded by metropolitan county councils.
Yes, good point.
And this suddenly became the problem, because they were very strongly Labour controlled, very yes. strongly public transport yes. orientated. And that was what particularly hit your long campaign to carry the M65 over the Pennine.
Yes.
But you still fought that one.
Yes.
You still fought that, and the M59 you still fought.
Yeah.
But you're against an inescapable tide, really, because you were fighting against people yes. who just weren't interested.
Thank you for that, Peter. No. In fact, it reminds me of M65, when the original line for M65 was got out, public inquiry. The idea was to continue it, of course, into Yorkshire, beyond Cone. And a line for that route was protected for many years. And I remember we went on a deputation, with elected members from the county council here, going to meet their opposite numbers in West Yorkshire, as it was then. And they just didn't want to know in West Yorkshire. It was almost as if they were wanting to put a gate up on the boundary and stop Lancashire traffic going into Yorkshire. Mind you, to be fair, they had problems in places like Bingley and so on down that route to get across onto M62. It wasn't easy, but on the other hand, what have we got? We've got M62 now, which is overloaded, as you know, in various sections. I mean, there ought to be three, well, certainly the M58, which I mentioned, which, of course, stops at M60, is M6, an underused motorway. It's about the only one we've got which is, you might say, underused, the M58, because the original concept was to continue it eastwards beyond M6. In fact, there was a bridge constructed on M61 at West Horton, to allow for the extension. And that was done when M61 was constructed. And it's never been done.
I was going to ask, actually, you mentioned about other things that didn't go through. I was going to say, you say that road construction in Lancashire slowed down quite a bit after James Drake left. Was there a sense in which most of the work had already been done, or was it just a case that things didn't happen quite so fast after
that? A lot of it had been done. I'll say the 30-year... target in the road plan well, was not achieved within 30 years. It was 1949, and you say, well, Preston Bypass started in 1956, and so he went in 1972, so there was a 16-year period. But there was a lot of that work was done, but the 30-year period, of course, was looking at other proposals rather than just the motorways. You know, a lot of local bypasses need doing anyway. And of course, the that book that we've done associated with the archive, you know, we look at all the other routes that need dealing with. For example, the route to deal with the Lancaster problem across to Heysham. You know, that's an important one. You've got the, I just mentioned, the M58 continuation eastwards. But I think it's an awful pity that the Manchester Sheffield route has gone by the board, although the Denton Relief Road and the Hyde Bypass, of course, were built as part of that ultimate proposal. So there's another one. And of course, the extension which I mentioned of M65 from beyond Cone, you know, those need to be done, I think, to relieve M62. The problem of M62, of course, and the department got cold feet there, is round about the Worsley area. You know, they're very heavy. It's trying to get from here to Manchester Airport. It's not easy. With any sort of time scale, of course, Thelwall hasn't helped in recent times because that route was getting blocked. So there are other things to be done. And the other sad part about it is that the other route, Bury Easterly Bypass, coming up from M62 and bypassing Bury, get up as far as Edenfield is concerned. And that should have been motorway beyond there, right up to connect with the M65 at Huncote. That's the east of Accrington. You know, but they wouldn't agree to that. They said, no, an all-purpose road. And that is a pity. You know, with a bit of extra money at the appropriate time, and you could have had a motorway there, which would have been very helpful, certainly to North East Lancashire.
What do you make of the current transport situations and the current transport policy, that sort of thing?
Well, I find it very confusing, quite frankly, as to where we're supposed to be going, because unfortunately the motorway has become in many areas a dirty word, and you know, all these so-called environmentalists, of which I regret that I've little time for. In the sense that we as engineers have been environmentalists right from the beginning. If you think of all the waste materials we've used for Preston Bypass, using burnt Corrie shale, which didn't help and was partly the cause of the problem, the use of fly ash, pulverized fuel ash, the use of chemical wastes on the Speke Widnes Link Road across towards the Runcorn Widnes Bridge, and also a big pile of chemical waste on M61, going through areas where nobody else would ever think of developing, through the peat areas, Worsley Braden Interchange. All these things are just not recognised by these so-called environmentalists. We've improved the environment more than any other form of construction there is.
Second only in tree planting to the Forestry Commission.
Well, exactly. Thank you for that, Peter. By the early 70s, we planted 1 million trees in Lancashire. We had a chap called Joe Sedner, we used to call Petunia Joe. Joe would plant trees all over the place, you know. And we've been doing this for years. Nobody's recognised that as being an environmentalist, but we're forefront from anybody. And of course, if you look at I've got a thing about the word environment, because I think it's grossly misused by a lot of people. The environment of somebody living in a congested urban area is as important, in my view, and I'm not being political here, in getting traffic out of that area onto a proper road network, is more important than perhaps the people bleating about a minor effect on the countryside. I mean, I'm all for the countryside, but people think that the environment is purely the countryside. Others, environmental, I like that term. I think environmental as an adjective, I think is important. You know, the environmental consequences of things. But to talk about the environment is completely confusing, I think.
Do you think the political side of current transport policy, the level of spending, the sort of mixed emphasis with public transport, is that the wrong direction, or is that kind of inevitable at the moment?
I think it's inevitable at the moment, but I think it's sad that the governments, successive governments, and of course the Treasury behind it, have not been prepared to go ahead with a proper infrastructure for this country. I'm not talking purely simply the northwest. I mean, you mentioned the southeast, for example. I think that's very sad that they haven't been prepared to do that. And yet, you know, in financial terms, you know, this enormous consumer debt that we have in this country, you know, massive debt on behalf of individuals through, you know, credit cards. I think it, you know, the figures are absolutely extraordinary, and yet governments are not prepared to have a debt for the development of the infrastructure, which is so important to the extent that they should be doing. It's completely inconsistent, in my view.